We're going to spend the rest of this hour talking tech with our social media and technology experts for Tech Radio. Let's start with John T. Meyer. He's co-founder and CEO of Lemonly in Sioux Falls. John T., welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me.
Jeff Litterick is a network engineer with the Bureau of Information and Technology in Pierre. Jeff, nice to have you.
Nice to be here.
Heather Benson is social media manager for South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Welcome back, Heather. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
And Kent Osborne is director of digital for SDPB. Kent, welcome as well.
Happy to be here, Lori.
So we have breaking news in the world of social media, and I think we ought to start there, and hopefully we'll have some time to get to some tech gifts for graduates and some scam alerts and whatnot. But let's start with the big news of the day, and let's start with yesterday when the president issued an executive order trying to limit the role of social media fact-checking on Twitter, and just sort of bringing up this broader question of what is the role of a social media company? Are they a neutral arbiter of free speech? Are they a publisher with the right and the obligation to do some editing? It all goes back to this 1996 law, which is part of the Communications Decency Act, and we don't necessarily need to get into the weeds for that, but it has to do with whether or not these companies can be sued for libel like a news organization can, and whether they have these good faith decisions and some immunity here. It all comes down to Twitter flagging a tweet of the president's, and let's get that conversation started. And I want to start with you, John T., because even after that executive order was signed and people were kind of debating whether it had any teeth as far as the FCC is concerned. It also requires Attorney General Barr to bring some congressional legislation and have Congress take a look at how tech companies and social media companies behave. But then today we're seeing more news unfold as one of the president's tweets has been flagged on Twitter for glorifying violence. There's a lot happening here, John T. What do you think sort of stands out from a tech standpoint, is this battle between these companies and the president?
Yeah, it's fascinating. Crazy that we are living in a time of, you know, a global pandemic, and that has become maybe the third biggest story of the day somehow. You know, so this Section 230, it's called, it basically allows social media companies, they have immunity from what people say on their platforms, but they also have the ability to moderate and remove content. And so it's sort of a contentious balance that they use, and they finally actually did it, you know, after months and months, maybe years of complaints in general, but specifically about Trump. They did it 2 days ago. He got upset, and then they did it again last night or early hours this morning about a specific tweet. And so his pushback, does it have teeth? There's already a lot of debate that it won't, you know, actually do anything, and the tech companies will fight this in court and it won't go anywhere. But it seems like both Twitter and President Trump have now pushed the ball down what will be a very slippery slope.
Yeah. Heather, from a social media standpoint, and again, we're trying to stay in our lane here. This is not a political science conversation or a conversation about racism. This is a conversation about tech and social media. But it's pretty significant when Twitter flags the presidential tweet as inciting violence or glorifying violence. That's no small thing.
It isn't. And I think every social media manager out there, people who are putting out content, moderating what goes on, you know, their page on Facebook or their page on Twitter, in addition to what Twitter and Facebook and all of them can do, every page has the ability to moderate comments that come on posts and posts that are placed on your page. And this will trickle down the line of how, you know, your coffee shop and someone puts an inflammatory post, it's going to have a ripple effect far further than this one little incident. As John said, I mean, we've pushed the ball down a slippery slope, and we don't know where it's going to land when it gets to the end of this. So I think anyone, even the average citizen who's out there commenting on their local news story, we all have a stake in how this plays out.
It's been interesting. And yeah. Heather, I don't know if you've seen this, where you see people that you are friends with on Facebook, you know, maybe you always sort of ignored them anyway because of the things that they shared or posted. And now all of a sudden you can't see their post because it's been on Facebook. It's been labeled as something else. It's been labeled as what it is, which was, you know, a source of fake news and not real content. It's shifting under our feet pretty quickly. And during an election year, after so much was written and reported on the role of Facebook in the 2016 presidential election. Have you noticed that, Heather, with people that you are friends with, all of a sudden their posts are looking a little different? I had another friend who was blocked for a few days and came back on and said, I have no idea what happened, but there's about 10 things I posted that it could have been.
Well, if I'm being perfectly honest, since the 2016 election, I live in a world of heavily personally curated feed. I did a three strikes and you're out rule for my own feed, where if you were, whether you were right, left, in the middle, what have you, posting stuff that, you know, was fake news or completely erroneous, you got, I didn't unfriend people, but you definitely don't show up in my world anymore.
Yeah.
So honestly, yeah, because I've taken the fringes off of each side, I'm not seeing it, but I know from personal conversations with people who preferentially post things that aren't necessarily, you know, fact-checked or from reputable sources, there's been an escalation in removals and blocks and being, quote, put in Facebook jail, as compared to a couple years ago or even 1 year ago.
Yeah. Kent, you want to weigh in on this notion of, you know, the Communications Decency Act and perhaps an inspiration to get some legislation to Congress. The implications are pretty big here.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack, as you said, and I'm going to address, let me just pop back on that conversation with Heather for a second. I've deleted, close to 1,600 people off of my Facebook feed. And
you have 1,600 and people to delete.
Not anymore. And I do keep a couple of people as, and I you can call them a canary in a coal mine,
right,
but
yeah.
I do need to see both sides of the street on a lot of issues, and I know with these particular people, how the extreme is acting on both sides. I've got, you know, extremely right and extremely left in my Facebook history, and I do purposely keep some people. It's you gotta have some tough skin to get through some of this, but I need to see the depths of where this all goes, and that helps me on the Twitter side as well, because when I see things that are obviously false, and when we start talking about elections and mail-in ballots and fraud and things, my skin starts to crawl, because it's something that's kind of really dear to my heart. I volunteer at a lot of election, or I work a lot of polls, elections. I don't work. Yeah. I'm a precinct worker. So I know the process. I've been through the training from the Secretary of State for years on end. And I know the process, and when I see people say things that are just so patently false, it really bugs me. And so when I see Twitter finally stepping up and saying something about it, I got a little excited, because, you know, the quote from Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey, you know, says, "We'll continue to point out incorrect or dispute information about elections globally," he said Wednesday. So I appreciate that. I see the slippery slopes. I really do. I find it very interesting how everybody's lining up to slam dunk on anybody that they can at this point. I immediately started getting emails from rivals to Twitter. "Oh, you better jump ship on Twitter. Come over to our platform, because we don't have any limits. You know, we don't restrict free speech over here." They started waving the free speech banner. And you know, I don't know. There's certainly a lot of pots of people in these different apps that are similar to Twitter. And then there are people, there are places that people have migrated. Every time somebody gets banned, you know, from Twitter or from a particular social media platform, they pop up over on another one, and there's a small exodus. You know, they're calling it, what is it? They're calling it Twixit for the Twitter exit. People are, it's a hashtag they're trying to get going, and they're just trying to get you over to their social media platform. So, sure. You know, they're you know, trying to jump on the ship here, but really there, I see a lot of blustering. I don't know if the executive order really has any reach with the FCC or the Federal Trade Commission. Those, of course, to work through those departments, it's going to take some time. Mm-hmm. And I think this is going to fall off the radar pretty quickly. We're in a pandemic. We're in an election cycle. I don't know.
I think this is classic Trump, right? I mean, he wants this. He's more concerned about this, I would argue, than the pandemic. And
well, do you think he's just going to throw some stuff out there and just try to keep getting, you know, fact checked and blocked
What I want to add to this conversation.
And already this morning, John, like, the White House retweeted the tweet that was flagged. So technically, should Twitter also block that tweet that came from another account associated with the president?
They already blocked it.
Did they?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yep. So, later, for clarity,
the White House and flagged it. So.
Yeah. I want to jump in here. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. And we're talking tech today. We're focusing on this, the recent developments. It all ties back to the demonstrations in Minneapolis and now spreading across the country after the death of George Floyd. And this is, to John T's point, this is probably the third time that I've had to say something on the air that I normally would not say on the air regarding this president. And it is that his tweet had the phrase, he called the people who were protesting and demonstrating, burning down, setting the third precinct for the Minneapolis Police Department in Minneapolis on fire, called them thugs. And he said, when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Now, when we get back to this First Amendment conversation, the First Amendment does not allow you to incite violence. And so whether or not the president is inciting violence in that tweet is a matter of opinion. The what he tweeted is a matter of fact. And they tagged it for glorifying violence and said it broke their rules. So, John T., it's a very specific, and Jeff, I'm going to get to you after John T., but John T., I want you to finish your thought on this president. Is this an election? I wouldn't use the word stunt, but is this election rhetoric, or is this president who has really redefined how a president and how a White House uses Twitter?
Both, I think. I mean, yeah. He made a comment, was it yesterday, saying, I would love to get rid of my Twitter account if I could. There's no way he would ever do that. He has such a he's actually a master at Twitter in terms of, depending on how you want to, you know, measure success, but if we're talking about influence, he's a pro. And I think there's no way that he's going to let this just sort of fall to the wayside. And actually, it's a distraction from the pandemic. And both of these things are really big, important, tough issues. And it's just a crazy time to be alive.
Yeah. Jeff Litterick, you wanted to say what?
There's a couple of things I want to point out because it's kind of interesting, a court case that was actually through the federal appeals process judged on this week too, in that it ruled some people were actually suing the social media company, I forget which one, I think it was Facebook, about First Amendment and free speech. And the court ruled correctly, First Amendment does not apply to any private company. They do not have to abide by the First Amendment. Only the government does. And since no social media company is a government entity, they do not have to follow the First Amendment. They can make whatever rules they want, however they want, and do what they want. And the executive order kind of flies in the face of that. The appeals court already said it doesn't fly. And to be honest, FCC and FTC have not listened to Trump in his entire presidency and have done almost nothing he wanted. So the odds of it going anyplace are close to less than zero. It's outside of the part of the executive order where he bans advertising from federal agencies. That's the limit of his entire power over this, unless Congress itself creates legislation to change stuff.
Right, which goes back to the part of the executive order that directs Attorney General Barr to draft legislation to Congress to start this conversation. That probably has more teeth than any direction to the FCC. Is that what you think,
Jeff? In a year like this, it's not going anyplace until well after the election. So
Heather Benson, it's important to point out that news organizations can be sued for libel if, you know, people can't, you know, put certain things in the newspaper on South Dakota Public Broadcasting airwaves. And the debate about what these organizations are, who is, you know, is Mark Zuckerberg an editor? Is he a publisher? That's not a new question. And it's really yet to be determined. What's at stake, Heather, here?
Well, I mean, we're going back, as you said, this is not a new question. What is at play in this national, you know, display of back and forth is something we've been talking about going back to even before the 2016 election. I mean, a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, Trump, our president, put out from the federal government a tech bias reporting tool where he had people send instances where they felt that Facebook or Twitter or what have you had removed their post or put them in Facebook jail. So his attention to this matter is not new. Our attention as a public matter is not new. And you read that whole executive order, there's a lot of really big questions in there. You know, he refers to social media as the new town square, the public square. Well, every city has, you know, the rights and responsibilities to regulate what happens in their town square. You know, it's not a big open do whatever you want thing in that scenario either. And the question of what is a social media company hasn't been answered. I don't think it's entirely wrong to say that a 1996 law is deserving of review because we don't live in the same world. We don't have the same internet. We don't have the same things going on. But the funny thing is that a lot of legal experts, I think the ACLU pointed out, if the executive order played out the way it appears the president wants it to, and they would have to, have that legal risk, more than likely he would actually have even, because they're not going to take on that legal risk, so there would be less content. The restrictions would probably increase because you
don't want to. Yeah, I saw that too. As written, this would cause about 60%. Yeah, it said something like 60% of his tweets would probably have to go away. I mean, this article that I read. So,
right. We are going to take a quick break from this conversation. I'm going to jump in here because we do need to take a break. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. We'll be back with Tech Radio in just a moment. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's Tech Radio Hour here on the program. We've got John T. Meyer and Jeff Litterick, Heather Benson and Kent Osborne with us, and we're going to jump back into this conversation we're having about the social media battle with the White House and the president signing an executive order that states his intentions at the very least about what he wants to change with social media. And we're going to get to Kent Osborne next, but first, Jeff Litterick, what do you want to say to move this conversation forward? You were talking right before we went to the break.
One of the things to keep in mind, and kind of where all the legal stuff is coming out of, is the definition of what they call safe harbor. And that's back when, to prevent people from suing ISPs for bad content stuff, is if you're considered a platform, you are not liable. But if you're a publisher, you are liable. So it kind of back then separated those that serve content versus those that create content. And over the years, Facebook and Twitter, as they moderate more and more, they're blurring that line more and more. And that's kind of where the danger comes in, is if they become not a platform, but a publisher, then they have all the problems, but all the responsibilities of like newspapers and the press in terms of accurate reporting, stuff like that, and how they moderate stuff, and much more restrictions. While if they remain a platform, they can pretty much do whatever they want. But they're kind of crossing the line. The more you moderate the site, the courts have decided more, the more you become a publisher. So,
yeah. I like what he said there, Kent, about they can pretty much do whatever they want. And I want to kick that one to you, because that is part of the frustration. And we had an author on the show not too long ago who wrote a book about, you know, how some of these platforms started, the white male college students, the men of privilege who started them, and how they overlooked, you know, for example, how women could be harassed on these platforms. And they had no concept that those things were going to happen. They didn't know what they were creating. And now we're dealing with consequences. You know, we have video of Ahmaud Arbery being shot. We have video of George Floyd dying. And then this whole notion of what is their responsibility as someone who has a journalism degree and had to study ethics and history of the press and libel and slander. Part of me does want to say, well, I'm so sorry that they have to put more thought into what they do here. But this is also not what they were intended to be. Kent Osborne.
Yeah, what a world, huh?
What a world.
When we were talking Arab Spring and we just were starting to realize potential of all this, how could you thoroughly vet everything that, you know, your new app could, you know, be used for, from, you know, from that private communication that terrorists or gangs or whoever could use to avoid law enforcement. I mean, it's just kind of mind-boggling you think it's easy just to put up an app for reporting polling places in Iowa, and all of a sudden it's not. You know, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's the nature of the technology. It gets used for good, it gets used for bad. I mean, you know, there's so many analogies that could go in here, but I want to bring the conversation back to what Twitter could have done, because I think you referenced that in your question. There are different degrees of what could have happened here. And this was just really a slap on the wrist. I mean, they could have banned his account. If they said he violated Twitter's terms of service, people have gotten banned for less. They could have deleted his tweet. They do that, you know, when they do. And, you know, that what they chose
they
to do.
It was important for the public, you know,
to see
the
it.
Public needed to know what the president had said.
Yeah. Yep. So they made up a new one instead of deleting, instead of banning. They flagged it and said, here, you can read it if you want to, but we're going to tell you a little story about how it's not right. And so. This is, you know, it's not limiting free speech. It's just calling things out when they see it's false. And
it's an expansion of free speech in some ways. Not, it's the opposite of limiting. It's. Go ahead, John T.
I just think that's another wrinkle to this is, you know, we want law and we want terms of service to be black and white, but at the same time, he's not the average Twitter user, right? He's the president of one of the most powerful countries in the world. And so, in a way, it gets messy, and that's where it really is that slippery slope, because he does have to be treated. I mean, the Library of Congress archives all the tweets that he sends. You know, like how where does that fit in? Like, there's so many different wrinkles specifically. But you're right, Kent. I mean, it certainly isn't consistent with the behavior of other accounts.
Remember, the courts have ruled that he can't block people, that governmental officials cannot block people on their Twitter account and stuff like that. So there's special rules about any government account, including his, because of that, and governmental rules and stuff of how they can interact. So it kind of gets a messy way both ways.
I want to add something to this conversation, too, to turn it in a slightly different direction. And we'll start with you, Heather. And that is celebrities kind of weighing in on things. And Madonna was criticized because she weighed in on this. And people called it kind of an unforced celebrity error because she suddenly felt she had something to say about what was happening in Minneapolis. And we've seen this throughout the pandemic, Heather, with famous people and influencers commenting about things and having it sort of backfire on you know, their brand in some ways. What are you seeing about these people who have, in calmer times, built a large following? And I'm specifically talking about celebrities and influencers, not necessarily, you know, political leaders, but are now having to navigate or trying to navigate. Well, if I say something about everything that happens and I say something about this and I didn't check my own privilege or I didn't think about what I was going to say, the consequences for that are now outsized as well, aren't they?
Well, I think social media, if you're a professional publicist for a high-profile celebrity, has to be an absolute nightmare, because there isn't a scenario 10 years ago where Madonna would have been put in a position without a lot of, you know, handlers and control around and asked a question about rioting, you know, and protesters and things happening in Minneapolis, Minnesota. That wouldn't have happened 10 right. years ago, that she would have had a public megaphone to offer anything to say, because a publicist, you know, these people are surrounded by professionals. It's a publicist's job. It's their manager's job to keep them from putting themselves in positions that might hurt their celebrity brand. And now we have social media, which we've seen everyone from Elon Musk going on at 2:30 in the morning and saying things about his company that caused that whole FCC uproar, to, you know, a celebrity commenting on an incident that they have, you know, not necessarily direct connection to, but felt an urge to say something about. And there's no filter there. And when you are a high profile person, you live with consequences that are different, or not technically that different from individual, because we all live with consequences of what our circle hears from us, but their circle's much, much larger when it's the millions and millions of followers you've accrued over time. And somehow, you know, people are still figuring this out. But I think we need to remember that Madonna or Musk, or, you know, they're all human, and sometimes you put your foot in your mouth and you say things and it wasn't well thought out, but the consequences.
Well, to bring that 20 million followers, to bring that more locally for those of us that aren't celebrities, this is the type of day where if you're a brand, a business who schedules your tweets or, you know, pre-writes and schedules them out to go live, this is where you maybe go back and take a look at what you're going to tweet, what you're thinking about, read the room a little bit, possibly either hold that tweet for next week or delete it altogether. It just can be dissonant at times.
And John T, talk about speed as well, because as we were having our conversation earlier about fake news and viral, reports that spread quickly, that's the whole nature of getting misinformation out. And it's also one of the big risks. I remember being, you know, pre-social media days, being at a concert in Minneapolis, an outdoor music festival. Something was happening in the world from a military standpoint, and Natalie Merchant was on the stage as part of Lilith Fair, and she got up and said something that was political, and a couple people in the crowd yelled, you know, back at her that she should just sing, and, you know, she kind of got this, you know, immediate feedback of what the crowd wanted her to do. And as far as I know, that, you know, nobody ever heard of that comment again, because it sort of fizzled right there in the concert floor. She sang, some people were inspired, some people were irritated, no big deal. But John T, with the internet, this can happen so quickly that you could lose control of a message or a criticism of your message before you even had a chance to think about what it was. So you better think before you hit post.
I think there's two aspects to bring it back to this show about technology. Technology provides incredible speed and reach, and also with the platforms today that are so visual, both through photos and video, that makes it a lot more emotional, right, than just reading text in a newspaper or even listening on the radio. And so we saw, even before George Floyd, we had Mr. Cooper, the guy who was birding in the park in New York City, right, and ran into the woman who was had her dog not on a leash. That happened, I think, on, gosh, this week. It seems so long. I think that was on Tuesday or maybe Monday.
Yeah.
But by the next
morning,
that woman had lost her job. She was fired from her job. They also took her dog. And what happened there? We had technology speed that story and go viral immediately. And we also had video. You know, we all got to see and hear what was said and how that exchange went down. And I think that's what makes this George Floyd story even more powerful than some of the other unfortunate stories that have happened the last few years, is that image and that video. It's so powerful.
We are going to take another break here. The Washington Post is reporting now that the police officer who was seen on video with his knee on George Floyd's neck before he died has been arrested by investigators. So latest update on that story as it continues to develop. We'll continue with Tech Radio after a break on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. We're Tech Radio this hour. John T. Meyer, Jeff Litterick, Heather Benson, and Kent Osborne are all with us. And maybe we can go around the horn and put a capstone on this conversation. And just with the question, because I do want to cover some scams and alerts and some other things that people are seeing right now before we close the hour. I guess maybe the question is, what happens next? Like, how should we all, especially here in South Dakota, how should we all be looking at this conversation about the president and Twitter and our own businesses, our own social media presence, our own privilege, our own way of seeing the world, and ask this broader question of what's next? What does this time of reflection offer us? And John T., I think you're the person to start that dialogue off.
Yeah, it's a big one.
I
think we have to step back, right? We have to listen. We have to have conversations. We have to gain perspective from those that we may not have. I think, when you throw COVID into this whole thing too, it's just such a wild scenario. And I think I'll take words when I maybe don't have them from someone else who I think said it better, but I saw former President Barack Obama tweeted today that so many of us right now just want things to get back to normal, right? We think back to February and we want to go to a restaurant and we want to hang out with our family and friends. And we all want that so, so dearly right now. But that version of normal for many Americans, most of us don't even realize it wasn't even a great version of normal, right? They don't, that normal wasn't good enough for those folks. And that's something that we need to consider. And when we think about normals, we need a new normal altogether. And so I'll just leave it with that.
Jeff Litterick.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree with John there. It just is the way it is. So.
Heather Benson.
Well, I think, in specific to what we started with this today, we need to really, as a country, as political system, as a business system, we do need to make the decision what is social media, how do we want to classify it, and then deal with everything that goes with that decision, whatever it may be, because none of us, from the people who founded it to the people who use it today, I think ever foresaw what it would become and how intrusive and enmeshed it would become in our lives and how it could be used and misused. And we've dealt with 4 years of very, very, very big ramifications on our political system. And we still haven't answered that question. What is it? How does it really need to be in our lives? And until we can answer that question and put some better definitions on it, we're going to keep coming back to these spaces that we are right now, where we keep asking the same question. What can they do? What can't they do? How should they be? How shouldn't they be? And at some point you have to, we're going to have to make some hard decisions one way or the other, and either take the reins off entirely and let the horse run free, or put them in a box stall and figure it out. But a decision will have to be made at some point, because it's obviously not functioning that well the way we've been rolling along.
Kent Osborne.
Well, he's earned the term Twitter president because he himself has highlighted how important Twitter was to him becoming president and to his presidency. And now it seems like he's trying to sort of destroy his maker. And while Trump needs Twitter, I'm not so sure Twitter needs Trump. And we're going to let that those cookies fall where they may, I guess, and see what happens. But there's a lot of blustering. We got to get through this. We're a little close to the trees right now. Some stuff that we got to go through a little bit of calm here, figure this out. And when we get to the other side, who knows?
And I would just add this for listeners. This has been a tech radio conversation. We've really tried to stay in that lane. In future conversations on In the Moment, we'll talk about racism and the politics of this with political science professors and other people that we'll invite to the program. We want to hear what you want to know about this as it relates to South Dakota, as it relates to law enforcement, as it relates to social media. Send us an email, inthemoment@sdpb.org. And I do want to spend our last, 5 minutes or 7 minutes or so with, the kind of basics, public service stuff that we like to cover on this show, and talk a little bit about tech gadgets and things that are available and not available. But let's start with scams and misunderstandings and problems. And Kent Osborne, kick us off, because this has to do somewhat with those little debit cards that are coming in the mail for people who have not yet received their stimulus checks.
Well, yeah, if you didn't have your bank account on file with, or a current version of that with the IRS, your stimulus payment did not get deposited for you. And at a certain date, they started mailing out, instead of checks, preloaded debit cards from actually MetaBank. If you're familiar with MetaBank in South Dakota, that's them. And they showed up in an envelope that didn't use any kind of a language about this is your stimulus check. It was just sort of some innocuous language and a plain envelope. And most people are accustomed, when they get things in the mail they're not expecting and it's too good to be true, or they don't know what it is, they throw it away. And the Better Business Bureau was on top of it pretty quickly. Some news organizations got involved and they're trying to get the word out. But I can see a lot of these probably made it to the wastebasket, and there was a big misunderstanding. So somebody really dropped the ball in the information campaign about what you should expect to see and how you're supposed to spend it, because there's a lot of confusion out there about this. And I just see bad things happening, and they're going to have to reissue these, or I don't know what they're going to. It's going to be a mess to clean up.
You just put $1,200 through the paper shredder in your office, and then somebody else sends you, Jeff Litterick. People are going to try to capitalize on that confusion and send you another card that is a scam. It's hard to keep track of at this point, isn't it, Jeff?
And there's lots of scams going on. The amount of scams on the stimulus checks and the debit cards have been going sky high, with people actually impersonating and stealing information and signing up to on the site to redirect the debit cards and stuff to them too. So if you haven't gotten your check, you need to be very aware that someone could have done some identity theft and told the IRS to send it someplace else. There's a lot of warnings from the FBI and the IRS about that right now, because it's so easy, if you have a little bit of information, to go to the website and fill in your information, say, no, send it to this address. So, and be impersonating somebody else. So be real careful about that.
Yeah, check your mail, pay attention, ask the right questions. Heather Benson, one of the other pandemic challenges have been shortages of everything from testing supplies for the coronavirus to toilet paper and meat products. How about those tech shortages? Are the shelves or the virtual shelves being restocked now with some of those webcams and other things that we saw disappearing early on?
Very slowly but surely, and I think we touched on this way back in March when it first spiked, but be aware of where your pricing should be. If it's not an emergency to buy things, gaining a little perspective on actual price of a webcam or a Chromebook or an iPad versus some of the pricing that's gone a little crazy even on suppliers like Amazon, and talk to someone local and buy local if possible. Because some of those online prices, I just went out, I have to replace my Chromebook here at home, and the prices for some of these models are still double what they were 90 days ago. So wow. The shortages, I think, will get better. But as we go back into a fall with more e-learning and more, people working from home, being aware of where pricing should be and where to shop and how to shop is probably something I need to take a little more care in right now than we did 6 months ago.
Yeah. Slow down, pay attention, compare prices, start local. Good advice. John T. Meyer, I'm going to ask you for some, I'm not sure if it was you who gave it to me or if it was Joel Brovelite or Kent Osborne last year when I was getting ready to send my daughter to college. I was asking about what kind of computer to buy, and I was advised, hold off and find out what the school wants and do your research through the school. So talk for a minute, John, if you will, about buying gadgets for graduates and some of the cautions and opportunities there before you invest too much in something that ends up to not be useful.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question when we're still trying to figure out what college is going to look like this fall. But yeah, I mean, I think now in a COVID world, we know it's going to be some sort of combination of some sort of hybrid of online and in person, or even 100% online. But I would really think through mobility. So maybe like tablets are very popular. Other great gifts, if that's too big of a gift, would be like gift cards, where people can then download apps, right? So an Apple Store gift card. An Audible subscription to buy books, or to Audible books. Those are some of the things that I think about. But yeah, the days of the big laptop, and certainly the desktop, are long gone. But even the big laptop, I think you're seeing the power of tablets and the things you can create and make on those. I mean, even our phones are almost as powerful as the laptops. So that'd be something I'd consider, is mobility and how they're going to use it, because there's probably not going to be big shared computer labs anymore.
Right. And so many of the school projects are going to be online, so it might be time to think about what kind of tech is in the hands of your high school student or your college student. We'll have to leave it there until our next Tech Radio. John T. Meyer is co-founder and CEO of Lemonly in Sioux Falls. Thanks, John T. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Jeff Litterick is a network engineer with the Bureau of Information and Technology in Pierre. Jeff, thanks so much. It's nice to talk to you again.
Have a good one, all.
Heather Benson, social media manager for South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Heather, thank you.
Thanks, Lori.
And Kent Osborne, director of digital for South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Kent, thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
Never a shortage on waffle makers.